What's good, everybody? Welcome back to the Slightly Educated Podcast. Today, we're going to be doing things a little bit different. Josh is busy. I mean, like, he started his job, and he's still working on his startup. So, he's done his funding round, so he won't be able to be with us today. But, you feel me? I might not be as good looking or as funny as Josh, but, you know, I'm still here. And today, we have one of my friends that I met over the summer. You feel me? He goes to Amherst. I think they're like the third. Are they somewhere behind SWAT or something like that?
You got jokes, bro.
My nigga is, you know, a real, again, like we've had like a real trend of having some real strong student athletes pull up on it, really showing that, like, you know, nigga, like, you know, we could do anything and everything. And bro is, you know, he majored in computer science and math, so you know he's already smart. Those are hard things to major in. All that while, you know, consecutively making to at least the Sweet 16 and the D3 NCAA backer. And they niggas made it up to the fucking, they almost had that shit to this year. They were runner up, you know. And on top of that, you know, he's like going returning starting this summer. He's going to be an investment banker and data science and analyst at Citigroup. And if it doesn't get any better, the nigga is 6'1". So
6'2".
I just looked on your athletic page, bro. It got you a 6'1".
That's from freshman year, bro.
The picture look awfully recent. Why they ain't
the stats, They don't change the numbers.
All right,
my weight still 175 too.
Hey, I'm going to be conservative. I'm going to put him in this conservative 6'1" and a half. but, yeah, bro, welcome to the podcast, bro. How you feeling?
I'm good, bro. I'm good. Glad to be here. Yeah. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
No problem, bro. So, Jimmy and I, we met at our internship last summer. You want to tell the people what you was doing last summer?
Last summer, I was working at Citi in their enterprise infrastructure operations and technology program, leadership development program. So it's the idea of taking people who have tech or science backgrounds but are also interested in the business side of things and bringing them into the company to kind of run a lot of the back end functions that make Citi really work in a lot of different ways. And so I was there at that program doing emerging technology risk management and analysis. And so the idea is in any business you have risks, whether it's and especially in banking, so where that's credit risk, which is just seeing if things are going to default. In every business there are going to be like inherent risks that you have to deal with, especially with regards to the technology that you use. And so whether that's a lot of businesses using cloud, which they can kind of offload onto Amazon for their cloud services, or that's the other technologies that you use in the business. So it was my job to really have an understanding of the emerging technologies. So technologies that were on the fringes, and maybe 3 or 5 or 10 years out in terms of implementation. Be a technology expert on those, and be able to advise and give forecasts in terms of what I thought the future of those technologies at Citi could be. And would be. So I was doing a lot of researching and writing, got a little bit of programming experiencing in, but I covered digital wallet technology, cloud computing, machine learning and AI, and blockchain.
Those are all really, really, really cool things that I really don't know much about. but what you call it, but you are, I mean, like, You moved into like a different role for your full-time outfit. So you want to tell people about that?
Sure. So when I was working with a lot of the AI and machine learning guys from around the industry, because my boss actually worked to create a finance industry working group of people who were more interested in the risk side of things in that particular technology. So I met a lot of those guys and they were like, yo, what are you doing in like enterprise technology and like risk, especially? You're way too sociable. Your background is crazy good. You should start doing data science. And I hadn't really heard about data science at all. I'd taken a couple data mining classes, which is a slightly different thing, but and like your way up and try to be a leader in that field and go to business and different things. It's just a waste of your social skills to be doing different things, doing what you're doing. And they were like, they were really gassing me, bro. I can't even hold you. They were gassing me crazy. But so I was like, all right, bet whatever this data science thing is, I'm gonna look into it and do it. They compared it to like aerospace in the 50s, like with NASA and stuff. So spent some weeks looking into it, understood how my background could apply, and just started asking around city if they had any data science type roles. And luckily I had a mentor, Stephen Monk, really great guy who I've met through my network, who helped me out a lot. And I've introduced him to you as well. But he kind of helped me ask around and find different people that were doing that kind of work. And luckily, literally on my last day, I had interviews with that team in the M&A part of the bank doing data science work. And they liked me and got an offer from them a week later. And so that's what I'll be doing.
You probably like the guys are right, bro. You are way too sociable for a nigga to be working on whatever the fuck they had you working in, you feel me?
Yeah, like I wasn't trying to be no dungeon coder, bro.
I feel like I was like, so like recently I just started my you know, like the service year shit.
Yeah.
And I have two, so I work in finance and IT. And mm-hmm. I was like, my finance director, I'm like, yo, it's like we instantly matched. Like, it was like a match made in heaven. Like, we love each other. We mm-hmm. start talking about each other. Yeah, we talk about everything and, like, you know, everything it could be. And then, like, you know, when I met the IT director, I was just kind of like, yeah. And I was just like,
yeah, bro.
Nothing's wrong. Like, you a cool guy, but I don't feel like we hitting it off as much. But I'm like, finding, you know, it takes a certain type of personality.
Definitely.
I feel like you definitely would thrive. You definitely going to thrive. You feel me? Niggas gonna fuck with you heavy. In the group. And what you call it? So I met bro. So he goes to some non-rigorous school. What's the shit called again? What's it? I forget what it called, bro.
I hate him.
I forgot what they called, but you know.
I'm gonna just say, I got offered by Swarthmore. Definitely dubbed him.
You definitely dubbed him.
Not even close.
Definitely dubbed him.
Dubbed him.
Why is that?
And dubbed him in the New York sense, not the DMV sense.
What's the DMV sense?
A dub is like a W. Oh, y'all like, yeah. A dub is like an L.
Yeah. You really did?
I did, bro.
Did you go on a visit?
No, I don't want to.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Bro, I remember this lost my coach, bro.
Wags? Wags? Have you ever seen Wags?
Nah. I mean, maybe one time in person. I might have seen one of your assistants, I think, at a camp or something.
Oh, yeah. Nah, Wags is... I love Wags. Wags is a funny looking dude, though. I'm not going front. I'm not even going with you. First time me and that nigga in my pants, and the guy like, he had like chops right here, like I don't know what it is, like lamb chops, or like what are they called? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, chops.
Yeah, and I was just like, I never seen that before. You feel me? I'm like, I've seen this in like TV shows, like, you know, niggas like back in the day. I didn't know niggas was rocking like that. But anyways, though, so you know, you go to Amherst, you know. I'm going to stop hating, I'm going to stop decrying. He goes to Amherst, a top three liberal arts school, right up there with SWAT. I actually, again, I'm going to stop decrying. Technically above SWAT. Still below Williams.
On a bad year.
On a bad year. It's been bad year. It's been bad year since I've been in college. I tell you that much, nigga. but what you call it? You know, walk us a little bit through, like, you know, your whole, like, what type of student you was. Because, I mean, obviously, like, yeah, you played sports, but, you know, you had to obviously have your, like, your academics on, like, a very, very high standard to even be considered by these schools. You feel me? So, overall.
Oh,
so
out of high school?
Yeah, out of high school, you know what I mean? So, okay, like, I got you. What was your whole process? Like, what type of student was you? Like, were you always on, like, the academics, on the academic wave? Or is, like, you know, what were your influences? Like, you know, walk me through how you got to, like, Amherst.
Yeah, man. So, it all started when I was, like, really little. So, when I was from 2 years old to third grade, I went to this all-black, tiny, essentially built out of a one-room schoolhouse in D.C. And so that was real fundamental, basic, like, if you could imagine, like, what, like, the type of things you hear in terms of when kids used to go to school back in, like, the 50s, or no, back in, like, literally, like, the 1870s, and W.E.B. Du Bois opened up schools, talking about, like, had, like, families and, like, people, like that type of thing, where it's just, like, really, like, family-oriented.
Yeah.
Learning just fundamentals. Like, it was really, like, you learn to read, you learn how to spell, you learn basic arithmetic. So, like, add, subtract, divide, multiply. Mm-hmm. I didn't have science. I didn't have, like, I'd never touched a computer. But, like, I was really better than anybody else in those fundamentals coming out of that school. And it was initially created because after they, like, after they'd integrated the schools in D.C., or there was just a huge problem where black kids who were trying to test into certain programs weren't hitting certain numbers when they went to the white schools. And so this was a black school that was focused on, all right, you can do whatever you want with our black kids, but we're going to get them right here. And so really old lady who'd done that in the past, but just kept things going. And so I was there. It was like black and I'm proud every morning. Had a little program. Like, Mary and Barry was the best mayor of D.C. ever. I'm black and I'm proud. Like, I knew the black national anthem by heart. Like, all this stuff coming out. And I was always around black kids. And so I had a really strong sense of self coming out of that in third grade. And then I moved from D.C. to Montgomery County, Maryland. So, like, literally 5 minutes away, right outside of D.C. And I went to a pretty much majority white school for 2 years of elementary school, fourth and fifth grade. And that was interesting. But I came out of the previous school TOTS, really having all my fundamentals down and the discipline as well. Because, you know, they wasn't playing games in terms of discipline. We had the pop. So if you act up, you get popped.
That ass?
Nah. Oh, I'm so serious. I actually I'm back home now and I found one. I'll show you. Bro, so a pop. Like, this is a pop. You see, it got ridges in it too.
Yeah.
So if you was acting up, you go to Miss Davenport, the head of the school. So you hold your hand, you get popped.
That ass.
So, 100%, bro. So they kept us. We were very disciplined children. It was
no timeouts, no detention. Niggas was really getting, bro, the action.
Oh, for no detention, no timeouts, bro. You don't finish your food, you pop. You don't. You get some wrong too many times, you get popped. You just, like, it was, we were all what you could have dreamt of is having your kid come out at that time. So that stayed with me. I went into public school, all pretty much mostly white school, the most proficient in math, and then tested into a magnet school for middle school, which was another magnet's math, science, and computer science. And I always had, I had my older sister who set an example for me, did the same thing as an example. But kind of just followed that path. My mom always pushed us in science and math. So that was never really an issue. But and then went to Montgomery Blair High School in their math, science, and computer science magnet program. I was always, I mean, I just had that foundation coming out of TOTS and was really disciplined. And I had my sister to see as an example of what can happen if you do stay disciplined. I mean, she, when I was still in middle school, she's 5 years ahead of me. So she'd gotten into MIT and was going, she played 4 varsity sports.
At MIT?
In high school. She tore ACL playing basketball her senior year. Oof. Was going to run track at MIT, but that just kind of ended it for her.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I had the blueprint kind of set out for me. I had my parents pushing. And I had a really strong sense of, just a really strong self-image and never really questioned my limitations. And so, yeah.
And then, you know, you was recruited for soccer and whatnot. So, like, you know, walk me through that. Like, you know, your whole athletic career.
Yeah, man. I actually grew up playing basketball from, like, 2 years old. I was a really good basketball player, actually. Like, a lot of the guys.
You would have been a good basketball player if you were actually 6'2". But seeing as you're actually 6'1", there are some limitations here.
Like, a number of the guys I played with growing up ended up playing hoops in college. I had D1 offers. And I was on track, most athletic at the time, and one of the better players at that time. But around, like, fifth grade, like, DMV hoops is really serious. I don't know if you know that. DMV hoops is, like, crazy serious. And so my mom never saw me as being someone who would go to college playing sports. And I was so busy, I was just happy to get out of the house from doing homework and stuff, or extra stuff that they would throw at me. And so fourth, fifth grade kind of took me out of playing, not fifth grade, but I stopped playing AAU basketball, like sixth grade, later in sixth grade. And started playing soccer. I was terrible. I was bad. I mean, like, but I was also like 99% tall at that time. So I was in eighth grade, I was 5'10", 5'11". And like, so I was always like the tallest and I was always the fastest. So like, there was no real competition athletically. So I could, I could play soccer. But once I started playing with guys who'd been, if I'm sixth grade, I was 11 years old playing with guys who one started that sport growing up and were playing at the travel level for 2 or 3 years already. Technically, I just wasn't keeping up. And so I was god awful at soccer for a long time. Rode the bench on this B team of like this travel club. And the coach was like, you can't teach speed. So like, I'll take it. It was actually old Nigerian coach, Coach Friday Johnson, great guy. He was like, can't teach speed. So you're going to have to just work on your technical skills. And if you develop, you'll be great. But it's going to take a lot of work. So I was just getting worked for years, wrote the bench, didn't do nothing. But like, I'd come an hour early before practice and like, I'd train with my coach because he had time and cared. And so did that for years. Eventually started playing a little bit. We had a goalkeeper issue. And so I played keeper for a season because I was like dummy athletic and could just cover the goal at that age still.
Yeah.
I actually had a crazy performance. I was playing really well at keeper. And then got back to the field because we finally got a keeper. And then by that time, I'd been working so hard on my technical ability and playing forward because I wanted to play forward that I had like one pretty good year on the B team and then one absurd standout year on the B team. I had like probably in a season of 10 games, probably had something like 12, 13 goals. And then the way it worked back then was we had a B team and A team. So if you play well and you're about to get called up to the A team, like you guest play in a tournament. And so I got to finally guest play and I was like, oh my God, I could do it.
It was lit.
And then, So that was like my freshman year of high school. And then guest played with them, played well, scored some goals, and then got on that team. And then at that point, it was like I kind of waned off basketball, but I hadn't stopped. And then I was like, all right, I'm playing soccer. Like, this is my thing now. Like, so I just didn't touch a basketball at all in high school. And then luckily, I mean, fortunately, God works in mysterious ways, man. Like, the guy who I was kind of backing up in my position on that A team had gotten injured. And so I'd gotten a lot of just really helpful experience because I had to fill his shoes. He was a nasty player. He ended up going to Georgetown.
I think you might tell me about him.
Yeah, he's nasty. And so just got experience that way. Kept working. I would work out every day over the summer. Just got good confidence boost when I started getting recruited, which just getting that recruiting confidence boost, Bo, is crazy. Really? Like, once you start getting hit up by coaches, and you're like, oh, like, I can do this. Yeah, like, you're right. I am nice. And like, bro, all it takes is like a couple of goals at like the right tournament, a couple of like good, like just that confidence boost was huge for me my junior year. And so after that, had a standout year like in high school soccer, had 15 goals in a regular season, like maybe 10 games, 12 games, was all met, all state. It was really definitely that confidence boost from getting recruited from colleges and stuff where I was like, all right, bet I'm doing this. I mean, yeah. Before that, I committed to Amherst. But yeah, it's crazy.
You said before that you committed to Amherst?
Yeah, I committed to Amherst the summer before senior year.
Oh, okay, got you. I got you. No, that you're right. I don't know if I to me, I was always skeptical of niggas hitting me up.
Yeah.
I was just like, nigga, where did you see me? How come I didn't see you?
True. I mean, yeah, it depends. Like, we didn't even play. Like, my coach is very much like, don't worry about winning. We're going to develop the talent now. So, like, like, even the A team, like, wasn't spectacular until maybe sophomore, junior year of high school. Like,
yeah.
And we didn't travel for tournaments. Like, there are always kids who, like, eighth grade, freshman year of high school, like, going over to San Diego for, like, Surf Cup. It's like, what are you doing? You're a freshman. Like,
the fuck out of here. That shit like, was like, vibes, nigga. That shit was you are like, you are going to get to go travel across the country with your little niggas, bro.
It was that's definitely mad, bro. That's like, I was jealous for sure. But it's just like, our coach is like, nah, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
We're going to stay here and you're going to develop. And then, like, when we started, like, when everyone started developing physically, like, because guys just hit that stuff at different speeds, like, it was crazy. Like, Maryland's one of the most competitive states for, like, high school soccer in terms of, like, club. So, like, we'd always, like, lost in, like, maybe, like, the second or third round of state cup or something. And then we went back-to-back my junior, senior year. And we had to play against Baltimore Celtic, who's, like, nasty. Yeah. Like, they're verified. Like, those dudes are
nice. If you know, you know. If you know, you know. They about it for real.
Yeah. And I was, like, but it's mad fun, bro. Like, I had a good time on that, like, travel soccer circuit. I understand. Like, meeting a lot of guys, playing against a lot of different teams. Guys who I played against, friends with now. It's a good time, man.
Nah, you definitely say something. DMV niggas. I remember seeing some DMV niggas when we went to like
soccer's like that, bro.
Yeah, I remember like we went to like ODP shit and I was like, I saw one of your niggas. One of your niggas. I saw one of your niggas.
Josh, I think Josh.
Yeah. And I was like, yo, this nigga was in the age group. He was in the 98 age group. I was 97. Yeah. I was like, nah, fuck out of here. That nigga look like a grown-ass man. Extra frolic. I'm like, yo, something is not right with you. Yeah, we all feeding these niggas.
Josh is tough. He's tough. You got something by DC.
Yeah, I saw that. That's tough, bro. That is tough. So, I mean, like, you definitely use. You also mentioned like you know you like the second nigga from these DMV area to come on. I don't know if you know a boss. He played for a Sidwell. Boss. Yeah.
No. Nah. I don't know.
Maybe you probably do because he said he started out on like the AAU circuit around like second grade. So I don't know if y'all probably like maybe y'all probably ran into each other on that circuit.
I don't know.
But. What you call it. So now, like, you know, you obviously got offers. So why did you choose Amherst?
It's crazy. My process was actually kind of crazy. I don't know if I told you about this before. So like way it works is coaches aren't allowed to talk to you until like your just started your junior year of high school, I think. And so like reach out to you like personally. They'll send you like ID camp. Yeah, they'll send you like ID camp stuff, which everyone will get. But it's like September 1st or something is like a hard like start date of like when they're allowed to hit you up. And so like once that date hits, it's like ooh. And so what, junior year, I was playing well. We'd gone to, I guess that winter we'd played at Disney Showcase and a bunch of different tournaments. Like we were ranked number one in the country in club teams that year.
Montgomery so, Falcons, they was nice.
MSC Falcons, baby.
It was nice. I remember hearing about them. It was nice.
We were tough. So what? Played at Disney. Impressed a lot of coaches, scored some really good goals. Scored probably one of the best goals I've scored in a long time, or scored ever, because I'm done now. Retired. Finito.
Sunday League, bro.
Sunday League, bro. You better be careful, bro. But the thing is, I get too serious for Sunday League, and, like, I know. I don't want to be, like, running around like a dickhead, just for no reason. It was just like, bro, like, we're drinking beer, like, chill. But I played really well at Disney and got a lot of looks, including from Amherst. So what? Like schools I didn't even know. Schools that I was just like dubbing off rip because I hadn't heard of them. Schools that I later went down to play, like Klein College and Bowdoin.
Damn, nigga shot wild shots. Any Klein College niggas, bro, find that nigga.
I've never lost to Klein College. I've never lost to Bowdoin. I beat Bowdoin every game of my career. Every game.
Oh, yeah, he calling you straight pussy, bro. Y'all say y'all can't play ball for shit, bro.
Played really well over that winter in terms of tournaments. And the spring, too, we got invited to some. I mean, everyone gets invited to the ID camps, but personal, like, exchanges with probably, like, got invited for overnight with Villanova, but my mom didn't want me to go because it wasn't high enough academically. Was really excited to talk with UPenn. Did a visit and like smaller meetings and camps and stuff. And was talking to the coaches, but it was actually funny. Like they were really interested, and then they saw me play poorly at this one tournament. They're like, nah. And I'm like, man. I knew I was playing so bad too. So they saw me play well, then saw me play poorly, and it's like, I bet not. And then Lehigh was really interested, but they had some, like, a lot of racist stuff going on there. So my mom was like, nah. And then, like, I visited there too. And then Brown. And I was like, all right, Brown could be cool. So I kept talking to that coach. Because I was mostly still looking at, like, Ivies and D1. Because I was like, man, get out of here. And, like, mostly D3 schools I just never heard of. Like,
some of them shit sound fake, bro. Sound fake, bro.
For sure. Like, I'm from D.C., and I'm, like, a science, like, STEM guy. So, like, I know, like, the DMV schools, and, like, I know, like, the big Ivy League schools. Other than that, like, I didn't know what a liberal arts college was. Like, I didn't know that colleges could be small like that.
Like, I thought liberal arts meant D3.
I mean, damn near. Like, bro, like, I didn't know what it was. So, I was just, like, and I'd never heard of anybody really come from a liberal arts college. So I was like, I don't really care about that. The small. My mom was like, keep it on the list, put Amherst on the list. I was like, okay, whatever. Never really gave me any mind. Like, I was dubbing their calls. Like, I remember getting called by the assistant and like called me. I feel like I'd not respond to their emails. And he called me, he's like, yo, hey, hey, this is Tiller Schmidt from Amherst College. I was like, oh, man. And then so I was at Brown ID camp, and like, you know how the ID camps go, like, you got the big sessions, and then the Brown, like, no other place I'd actually been at. They had this one day where, like, you have like three sessions throughout the day or something, but like, we had the morning session that, or like, maybe more than an afternoon session, whatever. But it was like, all the kids like go sit in the bleachers and wait to like hear what's gonna happen. And it's like, usually it's like you break up and go with it. Your coach that you're specified with or whatever, and it's like either games, mini games, or training, whatever. So this day was like, yo, like, they started calling names and like tell you to come to the front. So I was like, names you call, names you call. And he's like, oh, like these are all like the guys who are good. And then like I heard my name called. I was like, all right. And so we let it go off to this other field, like separate from everybody else. Might have only been like 20, 25 guys, like maybe 20 guys out of like the 150 at the ID camp. And it was just the Brown, like all members of the Brown coaching head, like Brown coaching staff. And like they just had us essentially go through what they said with a few of their players that were working the camp, like what was like similar to a Brown style like training session.
Yeah.
And so they just ran through that with us, and it was like essentially so they can like really just get a look at who they wanted to, because all these ID camps are just making money for the schools or for like the coaching staff. But like there are maybe like every ID camp there may be only 7 kids that they're actually interested in. Brown, yeah. Obviously, because it's Ivy League school. They pulled a bunch of kids from the academy, bro. Like, there are so many academy kids there. And there were a bunch of different schools there. But, yeah, so it was, like, 20 of us maybe training. And then after, like, because I've been talking to the head coach, Pat Laughlin, the whole time. But everyone's kind of walking out because, like, that's the end of training for everybody. And so, like, you see, like, the 100 kids leave the field and, like, they kind of pass by us. And then, like, our session ends. And, like, we're packing up and everything. And Pat Laughlin's, like, waiting. And he's like, and like as I'm walking back, he's like, comes around me, like comes beside me, puts his arm around. He's like, hey, like Jimmy, like really, like it was like some serious like every recruit. And I was like, oh, like all right, bet. Like it's like just wanted to let you know, like we've been really interested in you, like, and we've been talking, obviously, have all your information, and like we're liking the way you play, and we just wanted to tell you that there's a spot for you in the class of 2020. I was like, all right, bet, like say less. I want to come here.
Is that?
It was what's up. I was like, I texted my parents that night. I was like, yo, Brown, done. And then, like, so I was like, all right, so I can, like, if I can commit now, like, that's what I'll do. He's like, yeah, for sure. Verbally committed on the spot. And then, like, I'm talking to coaches, like, the assistant coach, because I'd sent him emails, and he was like, coach will get back to you later. Like, did all this stuff. I was like, okay, cool. Like, I guess it's like hot, cold, whatever's going on. And like, I keep talking. He's like, nah, like, it's dub. The assistant coach is like, nah. What? I was like, bro, what? Like, he literally told me I was good to my face. Yeah. Not no email, not no phone call, to my face. And he's like, nah. I was like, oh, okay. And like, after that, like, I was like, I had an internship. Yeah, the summer between junior and senior year. So I was like doing an internship, and I was like real heavy. I was like, man, like fuck all this. Like I don't even need to play soccer in college. Like all this stuff, and like I had the Amherst camp after that. I had the and like this has happened after like all the camps that I gone through camps. But I had Amherst camp after that, which like I really went to because the MIT coach was going to be there, and I went like was also interested in MIT. And shout out to Kembo Val. He's great. Like a big older, like he's like a father figure to me. Head coach at MIT soccer. And then like, cause the Michigan coach was there too. And I was maybe thinking about going to Michigan, but like,
to play ball? That,
yeah. So I've been talking to them, not nothing serious, but like I was kind of talking to their coaches and stuff. And like I had a camp at Carnegie Mellon, but actually at the Amherst camp, I got injured cause I'm like, you know, they have the little kids that don't know what to do them, bro. So, like, some, like, sophomore had a terrible tackle on me, messed up my foot, fractured the bone of my foot. And so I was walking around Amherst Hilly-ass campus with, like, a messed up foot, just hurt. And I was like, I hate this place. I literally was like at Amherst, like, I'm never coming here. I hate this place. And then Brown folded after that, and I was like, all right, Carnegie Mellon, MIT, or Amherst. When, my older sister went to MIT, and I was, like, on the same track as her my whole life. I was not trying to be like her. And then Carnegie Mellon, like, good team, but, like, it just sounded like no fun because, like, when I was there, bro, when I visited, like, I asked the dudes, like, what they do after, like, game week, like, after game weekends and stuff. And they're like, you know, like, we just go back to our rooms and, like, study. And I was like, what? I didn't even party. Like, I didn't party at all in high school, but I was like, nah, that can't.
That's
be
not it. That ain't
that's
it.
Like I got when I get to college. That's not what I'm doing. I'm not going back to my room after I win a game, bro. And so, I was like, dubbed. And then I was like, Amherst, whatever. It was kind of like a rebellious thing for me personally, because like my mom wanted me to go to MIT so bad, and I was just like, no, like fuck everything, because Brown got messed up. So it worked out for me perfectly.
Yeah, that's quite a rebellious phase. A lot of niggas go smoke weed and do drugs or whatever, but you fucking go. You go to school. It's a real fuck you to the people, you feel me? Yeah, I hope my child fucking rebels. Shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny, man. Like, but yeah, that's how my recruiting process worked out. A lot of twists and turns.
Yeah.
But
no, I feel like I haven't met anybody. Like, I think most niggas end up being like, most niggas have a very interesting like D3.
Yeah, if you end up, if you're like nice and you play D3, you got there. It's like, it's more of a last chance you type of situation sometimes, especially if you're not from where the school is. Yeah. Like, Amherst is a great school, amazing soccer program. I love my coach. I love my, like, really like my team.
Uh-huh.
But like, a lot of the time, like, even like the other sports that are nice at Amherst, like, our rest in peace to the lacrosse team. But like, I like one of my, like my best friend, like he's the one black player in the lacrosse in my class.
Mm.
It was same thing happened to him. Like, he was committed to Brown, and then Brown, I think it was either academics, something happened. But like, there are a lot of guys like that, not only in soccer, because Pat Laughlin, the soccer coach, has done that before too. Apparently, to guys who've gone to Amherst before me. Another guy in my class was also committed to Amherst. I mean, committed to Brown. Like Dane Lind, who should have been All-American this year, which is It is absurd that he was not All-American. But he was literally he was also committed to Brown, and then Pat, like, he got injured his senior year, and Pat Laughlin was like, "Nah, you're gone."
Damn,
and so we both ended up at Amherst. Yeah, it's crazy, bro. Like, it's cutthroat. It's cutthroat, and like, it's crazy to see that adults will not hesitate to play with the lives of children, low key, like, bro. How are you gonna lie to a child? I'm 17 years old, bro. Like,
nigga, like, how you sleep at night knowing that you just like really made that nigga cry? Like, bruh, like, yeah, bro, come here,
I'm 17 years old, bro. I'm 17 years old, bro. Like, what? But yeah, it's interesting, man. Like, yeah, like a lot of times, just last, like, we had so many conversations like this freshman year, like, yeah, across different sports. Like, so Amherst football, it was like, yeah, I was supposed to be at Penn, but, you know, like, yeah, I was supposed to be at Brown, but, you know, oh, yeah, I was supposed to be at, like, this place, but, you know.
Nah.
It's funny, man. It's funny.
I feel you on that. That's really, what the fuck am I talking about? I was D3 all the way, baby. I had 2D2 D1 niggas hit me up once, and I was just like, but D3.
That's a great feeling, though. I mean, bro, I definitely do not regret it at all. Like, having played at the level I played at, and like then seeing my friends go D1, and I'm like, so especially in America, like, you got to be really, 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 really good at soccer to get anything out of playing soccer that lasts longer than the years you played. So like, for example, you make an investment in your school that's going to pay dividends for you later. But like, unless you play pro, like, you're not really doing much for yourself by spending over a certain amount of time in your life playing like soccer. So like, I see a lot of my friends who play D1 soccer who like are just going on to regular life like me now. I'm like, bro, like, you had to wake up at 6:30 a.m. in your off season. I'm chilling, waking up 5 minutes before class at 11, just because I can. And I'm winning games. Like, I've lost fewer games in my career than a lot of people win in a season.
Nah, I feel you. Like, I definitely feel it. But I feel like you should probably, like, realize, like, again, like, it can only be fucking two teams in the fucking final, you feel me?
That's true.
it's like, you know what I mean? Like, everybody else, some other niggas was able to, like, wake up, like, 5 minutes before class, but they also probably got the ass spanked like every fucking day. That nigga would have mind going to D1 and getting all the free gear and still getting his ass beat. You feel me?
Bro, like, and that's a crazy, like, I have friends who play just even basketball, D1 level.
Yeah.
Like, they just get burned out. It's like, at the end of the day, if you're not winning games, it's not fun. Like, if you're not getting paid and you're not winning, it's not fun. Like, my coach, like, literally in recruiting me, he was like, bro, like, you can go, like, to a mid D1 school and, like, compete for second or third in the league every year.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe if you have that star in your class, you can get, like, first seed in the league. But you're not going anywhere near the national championship. Like, let's be real. Like, you're not going anywhere near the national championship at, like, my level. And, like, conference championship is also just, like, it's not a – your goals are so – you're only so low. Or you can go to, like, D3, ball out, and, like, also have – you can have your life. Like, yeah. So versus in my off season, like, I'm working out every day. But it's not, like – 2-a-days and 6:30s. It's like I still go to class. I'm a regular person. I party on the weekend. And I'm not like, thank God I'm not working out partying. And I'm just like, yeah, all right, this is like normal life. And like I win a lot. Like
it helps.
It's just
it
fun.
Helps. It helps. It helps.
It's just fun. It's just more fun, bro. Like, because we're not, I mean, I'm not, I wasn't trying to play pro, so I might as well just have fun.
Exactly.
And play at a high level.
Exactly. You definitely, winning is fun. Like,
winners, to the winners go the spoils, man. To the winners go the spoils.
Exactly. Winning is fun, bro. Losing is not it at all. Losing, like, sucks. Losing is not it, bro.
Losing is not fun unless you have a culture of losing. That's the thing. Like,
how? I feel like you get your ass. Like,
so, like, there are a bunch of the, like, there are a bunch of schools in different sports where just, like, they're used to losing. So it's like,
still, man, not like fun though.
It's not fun, but like it doesn't change how you are. Like you don't get the benefit of being like, of like having winning boost your mood, but like you don't get the con of like, dang, we lost, so we're sad. Like you lost, so it's regular. Just like, but the same thing is like if you're from a winning culture, so like I'll give you an example. My freshman year, we lost one game, and like that day was probably the worst day of my freshman year in entirety. Like, because like it was literally we do not lose. We do not lose. Like that was, it's not like we're gonna go into the day and try really hard and we're gonna hope to get a result. It was like, no, like we are not going to lose ever. Like the season before, they just won the national championship, and it was like, oh
yeah.
Like, all right, we got expectations. And it was like, so that, I was like, in that situation, I was probably just as, like, relieved. Like, when we won games, I wasn't like, oh, bet. Like, yeah, like, we won. I was like, whew, thank God we didn't lose. Like, bro, like, the one time we lost.
Yeah.
That year was fine because, like, that team was nasty. But, like, the one time we, like, when we lost my sophomore year, like, we just didn't have balls at practice. It was like, you motherfuckers are running. Like, that's what we're doing. And, like,
that's brutal.
Nobody better smile. Nobody better talk on the bus ride home. Like, don't talk, don't smile, don't laugh. This is not funny. This is not enjoyable. Like, yeah. It was tough, bro. Standards were high. But, like, at the same time, like, now I get to be like, hey, Bowden, you suck. You never beat me.
Nah, facts. Nah, that's a fight. That's definitely a fight.
I think winning culture is hard to be.
Winning cultures. But winning cultures is definitely. I think culture is very important. You think you have like? Actually, now before I go to that question, I guess like something. I never been to Amherst at all. You feel me? But my mom, I guess like when my mom came to visit, she told to some other parent. And it was just like, she was telling her about her son who got into like, you know, Williams, Amherst, and SWAT. And she was like saying like, one of the reasons she really did not fuck with Amherst and like Williams is because like mad preppy. I think preppy was the word she said.
True.
Yeah, she was like, you know, apparently like, I don't know how they say you get like, like, since y'all in the Northeast region, so, like, y'all got feeded from, like, a lot of them, like, boarding schools and shit.
Bro,
so
I thought boarding school was a joke before I got there.
Where?
Yeah, I was like, what you mean? You didn't go home?
That I, bro, niggas be like, yeah, I haven't lived at the crib since 6 years old. Like,
are you good, Mike? Are you good? Is everything good at home?
That ass. And I'm just like, you know, what was it? Because I'm like, I'm not going, like, sure, it was niggas at SWAT, you feel me? Like 6%. Facts. And niggas was corny. Some of them.
Facts. I mean, they're damn near the same schools, bro. I'm not, I ain't gonna hold you, like.
They are, but I'm thinking, like, I feel like, just like, how, like, which SWAT portrays themselves to be, and what, I mean, like, what it is, you feel me? It's just like, you can't, we, I feel like we attract a different brand of person.
True. True. You feel me?
Like, I feel like most people, like, as you said, like, you, I feel like they basically the same school in terms of rigor and stuff like that, and niggas could be interchangeable, but I think it really comes down to, like, personality type. And I'm just like, from the way that people make, like, you know, like, Williams and her seem, like, you feel me, you got more, like, the preppy whites and shit. So I'm like, what was it like? I mean, like, even, like, for example, like, you know, like, I was following up with, like, with the lacrosse team, and I heard, like, you know, like, them niggas is wildin',
bro.
Them niggas is wildin'. So I'm like,
they've been that way.
For real? So I'm like, what's it like really going to, like, a school, like, you know, what was it like going to Amherst, you feel me?
Facts. I think you do bring up a good point. Like, I don't know how many sports team, how big, how, or how many, what percentage of sophomore people or students are athletes, but I can, like, give 35. Like a, yeah, like, I'll give you a good explanation for it. Yeah, so, like, and your location probably helps. So, like, our sports teams are, like, white. Most sports, like, soccer, diverse. Like, this incoming class was all people of color. Now, people of color is a technical term nowadays more than it is a real term. So, like, some of those guys are white passing, maybe, like, two of them or something, but, like, not, like, your New England prep school guy type of thing.
Yeah.
And, like, that's my coach is doing that very intentionally. But, like, Amherst sports is just white. And, like, especially the NESCAT, it has to do with a lot of the recruiting rules. And so, where coaches are, like, how much money coaches can use to do recruiting and stuff like that. So, like, for example, like, the volleyball team is all from California, and that's because the recruiting budget for travel is, like, $1,200. And so if the best volleyball talent comes out of if the best volleyball talent comes out of the West Coast, because people don't really play volleyball like that on the East Coast, it's just not as much of a thing. But so if the best volleyball talent comes from the West Coast, and the coach can only make one, maybe two trips out there a year, you're going to get, like, most of the time, like, sometimes, I know girls who got recruited by, like, the coach had a girl on the team and was like, yo, do you know anybody we could recruit? Because she only got one shot. So, and, like, some people just got recruited off referral type, you know what I mean? Like, so, the, especially so for big teams like new, like, football and lacrosse and different stuff, like, especially women's lacrosse, women's sports and stuff, part of it is who plays the sport, but also who plays a sport in New England, and, like, who plays a sport in the region that's closest, and, like, would also hear about Amherst. And so, like, when this, the problem is Amherst didn't really start diversifying until, like, maybe 2008 type shit, you know what I mean? So, like, maybe 2010-ish. So, like, most of that came through the regular student body, because what I saw from being at Amherst was, like, Amherst Athletics has a vision, Amherst College has a vision, and, like, there's a huge wall in terms of what they're, like, trying to do, because Amherst College, like, we care about diversity and inclusion. Amherst Athletics is like, yo, we're trying to win games. And, like, yeah, we kind of care about it, but, like, not really. And so, like, you see, like, until last year, it had no black people as head coaches. It had a couple black people sprinkled in as, like, and not I say sprinkled in just to talk about quantity, not as if, like, they're placed there, but, like, a couple black assistant coaches. Like, and it's just, like, why, like, my mom's biggest thing for me playing was, like, yo, I want you to have a black coach. like, because she understands the dangers and what we're going to have to go through, especially going to these white schools. And so, like, what you see is Amherst Athletics is really white, and so that's a third of the school. And then, like, obviously you got your legacy kids. It's like 10 to 15% of the school. Some of those kids play sports. So it's like 40%. Like, say, like, Amherst Athletic is like 80% white. So you got, like, a third of the school is athletic, is like, a third of the school is athletes. So, like, say 27% of the school is, like, white based on athletics, just alone. And then you got 10% for legacy, about 37 now. And then, like, it's funny. You go to Amherst and you ask people who, like, if they know any white girls who don't play sports and aren't legacy. And people can't name you, like, five.
Fuck out of here.
And it's a tiny school, bro. It's a tiny school. Like, you know them and everybody. Like, I know, yeah. Like, there are white people who can't name five. Like, just because, like, if we're trying to get in, if we're trying to get diversity, we can't be reliant on the coaches who are white and don't really care about diversity for the most part. And, like, don't understand it, don't care about it. In my opinion, the results are the same. Like, we can't depend on them to bring in the numbers. And, like, all, especially because all that's done ahead of time before admissions. So we know the student athletes we're getting in, and we know how we have to make our numbers work by percentage to make sure our diversity numbers are okay, or what we want. What we want, okay, look good, same thing. And so Amherst Athletics is super white and, like, super preppy, and it has to do super, like, different culture. Like, there's, I think that's the biggest reason why there's a whole athlete, non-athlete divide. And so, like, when I went there, like, I think my team in particular, because of our team culture, not to, like, say, like, we're the greatest guys in the world type, but, like, I think largely because of what soccer is as a sport globally, there's a much different influence in something like football, which is, like, very patriotic, jingoist, like, a lot of jingoism going on in football, like lacrosse.
What is jingoism?
Jingoism is, like, kind of some, like, slightly wicked nationalism.
Okay, gotcha.
Like lacrosse, which is, like, the epitome of colonialization. Like, to take a sport from a native people, put your flag on every piece of apparel in it while still fucking over the native people. And then, like, whenever the native people are themselves, you make fun of them for it, especially in the sport. Like, lacrosse is, like, the epitome of colonialization at this point in time. And then, like, other sports is just, like, who knows about Amherst and is going to reach out to those coaches, and who lives close enough to be seen by the coaches. And so, like, it's a huge issue. And, like, most of those kids, like, and the coaches have relationships with some clubs, but mostly prep schools, especially things like football. Football is basically, like, is most, like, high school based, like, not as much, like, travel teams and stuff. So it's a lot of, like, same kids from, like, the same prep schools in the Northeast. Prep school is white. So there's a huge issue, in my opinion, in terms of, one, coaches only got so much time in the day to recruit. Two, the NESCAC in particular has a lot of rules that make it hard for students of different backgrounds to make it there in terms of being pulled, but also who's pushed to go there. But yeah, I mean, it can be whack for sure.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know if I answered your question.
I mean, like, you did. Because, like, to me, like, from the outside looking in, I was like, what? I think I counted. I was like, yeah, how many niggas really play, like, black people, black, you know, niggas really played, like, sports as SWAT? You know, 35% of, like, something, like, similar to y'all, like, 30%, whatever.
Yeah.
I was just like, all right, so you got myself, this, that, the. I was just like, bro. Like,
my hands, and, like, you got this many teams, and we can count on my hands.
I mean, we have a decent number of, like, student athletes of color. We formed our own group, CACSAC, which is, like, Council of Amherst College Student Athletes of Color, just because SAAC was SAC already, was created. And it was, like, student athlete, whatever, advisor committee, whatever, I don't know what that is. But we actually even have a decent number, but, like, still. I mean, especially when you come from, you're from New York, I'm from D.C., like, D.C. is chocolate city. Like,
yeah.
New York, depending on where you're at, probably like not like you not seeing that many, or you seeing a lot of people of color, the people that look that's like you and me. So we go out to like rural areas for schools that once upon a time only took one black person a year. It's like, you know what I mean?
You met Dakota like, boys.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's just a shock. Like my, like, so Amherst talks about like being the most diverse or whatever, because the majority minority. My high school was like 15% white people. And we were diverse. Like our black people weren't all black Americans or weren't all like a lot of first gen people. A lot of people didn't speak English as their first language. A lot of Hispanic people. A lot of Hispanic people from across the, like from around the world. Yeah. Like that was diversity to me. So going to Amherst, like I was like, what y'all talking about is diversity. Like it's still a lot of white people here. Like be from different places, but like there's a lot of the same like New England prep school white people. And so it's like it didn't feel as diverse to me as things I'd previously experienced. Mm.
I think I always switch it up just real quick because I remember we had when we went to this rooftop over the summit, right?
And yeah, bro.
I remember we having a conversation, which I think something that I think like I would definitely like, you know, just so you could hear, like so other people could hear it, because I think it definitely was super insightful and it definitely told me a lot, right? And it was like, you know, you hear me?
Mm-hmm. I got you.
So I was like, you know, you played soccer and you went to Amherst, and you know, I asked you if you was like either African or Caribbean, right? And you know, it was like that within itself, it does show an issue, right? Because
yeah,
like why would I default to that? I mean, like I myself am Jamaican, right? But then what I realized was that, you know, even when I was looking back to my, like, with my niggas at school, and I was just, like, if you really, like, looked at it, and I was just, like, how many niggas is really actually African-American? Like, you know, niggas is saying, like, oh, we got, like, you know, we doing all this, like, we got a whole bunch of black people here. Yes, but then, it, like, a lot of the niggas tend to either be, like, zero-gen as myself, or first-gen, second-gen. And you broke it down to me, I think, really well. Like why is that, like, you know what I mean, like you broke it down, you like provide some great insight, because I would say though, like a lot of us Caribbean folk and a lot of the African folks, like, you know, like we tend to beat down African American people, you know, just like the way things that they say we say and shit like that. And like, you know, I always try to tell niggas be cognizant, because I'm like, you know, like all y'all niggas is probably ticking African American on that fucking box when it was like suitable, when you was fucking applying to some fucking program, you feel me? Like niggas was putting out their Venmos for Juneteenth, and I'm like, my nigga, I don't think this one applies to you, bro. You feel me?
I mean, yeah, like I've been doing a lot of thinking about it, even more, like further recently. There's a great documentary on Netflix about the script spelling bee and how Indian Americans have dominated the script spelling bee since for the past like 20 years. And it's like, one of the speakers on is actually an Amherst professor of American studies. And they talked about, like, one thing that was very important for them to talk about that they did highlight actually was immigration does not happen by accident. And like, especially in developed countries, and especially here, like in the 60s, and like, I think it's 67, Lyndon Johnson put like essentially diversified, a lot of the country diversify itself and taking immigrants from around the world. But those immigrants were allowed to come if they had certain educational background or like certain occupational skills. And so like the joke is like, the only doctors in rural places in America are like Indian doctors. And it's like, because those people had in their respective nations had developed, had such talent that they wanted to, that America was like, okay, we recognize, or America, government was like, we recognize that as talent that we would like to bring to our country. And so if you'd like to immigrate here or come here and take advantage of the opportunities we have here, by all means do. And so that happened from a range of places, like, and so even in, especially in Maryland, like a lot of like the Asian American people, like I'm friends with here, and I mean friends with, not to make anecdotal evidence, but there were waves of educated people who came from outside the country to the country who are people of color, and get looked at as such, but have the human capital that the people of color in the country at the time did not have. Yeah. And so you come, so like, for example, before, I mean, right, like, so my dad went to the first integrated school. He was in the county, sorry. So my dad grew up in North Florida. They were the last, his county was the last county in Florida to integrate public schools. Not my grandfather, my dad.
Niggas be thinking like bullshit was so far, bro. Like, oh, it was so far in the past. Yeah, nigga, that's your dad, bro.
Yeah, like, and so he was in the first class, and they started that when he was in high school. So he was in the first class that was integrated in his county. And like, integration had mostly bad effects or bad results for Black Americans because we now gave our power to white people to judge us. But that's a whole different story. But like, the opportunities that the human capital that was built and that had to be kind of built and withered away by policy, by racism, by systemic racism, Black people who were here at the time, anybody who wasn't considered white at the time, really. There were times when Jews weren't considered white. There were times when Italians weren't considered white. There were times during slavery where Celtic people and Irish and Scottish people were looked at as less than. And so they had worse jobs than slaves did in a lot of ways. So like, there's a great example. Like, so cleaning the bottom of ships was an Irish person's job, mostly because a white person wouldn't let their property be damaged in such a way as to possibly be lost doing something as ridiculous as cleaning the bottom of a ship. But that was a job. And like,
yeah.
But so the human capital that was kind of acquired in more par level environments outside of the US and then brought and kept within the families that came here was just kind of raped and pillaged out of the Black American community. And so even though we'd had affirmative action and like different things like that to kind of try to level the playing field, mm-hmm. and kind of really not level the playing field, but kind of give back what was owed to Black Americans, because on paper, you and I are both Black or African American, and I'm not saying you, but like someone who is a child of a Black engineer or African engineer who comes to the United States, we both get judged. And I definitely have a privileged background. Both my parents went to college, but like, we both get judged, even though that the creation of that policy was mostly meant for someone like me, who's a descendant of slave. So it's interesting. I mean, which is why, right? Like, policy can help, policy can hurt, and unless you understand the history of everything that happens, which we don't teach very well, if at all, in this country. The only excuse that you can have is that people are inferior or superior and people deserve to be where they should be or what else or whatever, you know? So like, I mean, I just think about a lot of like the things in terms of discrepancies, and people actually use what we talked about as like the reason why Black Americans are behind is because their culture is bad or whatever, all this stuff. And it's like, so you can either take if we see a disproportionate impact, it's like, say Black kids are failing this class, are getting C's, while white kids are getting B minuses. And it's like, the Black kids, it's like something's going on, because all humans are, for the most part, across a large set of numbers, going to track the same way. So something's going on that's out of these, that we're not seeing, and it's not in these people's control, or it's happened before and it's having an impact now. Or we can sit back and be like, if we sit back, we're assuming and we're okay with it. We're okay that this is going on, and are going to assume that there's nothing we can do about it. Which is like, okay, these people are just, this is how it's supposed to be, because these people are just not going to perform well ever. And so it's like, you can, which is kind of the whole, like, you can decide to act or you can decide to sit back and be part of the problem. I don't know. That was poorly explained, but it's like
I think you definitely you capture a lot of things. Because you know you capture a lot of things, bro. And I feel like I think you definitely educate, like you help educate like a lot of niggas, especially like a lot of us immigrant niggas who think like, oh, we just came here and we fucking hit the ground running. I'm like, no, nigga, like, you know, like my mom had a degree in Jamaica, like, you know what I mean? She went through all those college shit. You feel me? Like, like, you know.
And that was part of the process of letting her come here too.
Like, exactly. You feel me? And then like, so I don't trick myself at all saying like, oh, I'm some fucking genius because I know I'm not the smartest nigga in the world. Like, I don't trick myself into thinking like, you know, me being where I happened to land was just like off the strength of my own goddamn work ethic and my fucking big brain. Like, I know what it is, bro. You feel me? Like, you know.
And not to say that you're lesser than because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, even when I went to Jamaica, when I lived in Jamaica, like, I went to a prep school in Jamaica. Like, you know what I mean? Like, obviously, like, while, like, you know, we came here and, like, you know, your college degree didn't translate and all that great shit. And we had, niggas had to start right over. But, you know, we had a base. We had a base.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And there's also the values of seeing what the benefits of education are. So, like, exactly. you can be black and educated in America in the 50s and white people still calling you nigga and not giving you any opportunity. And so at that point, it's like, all right, there's no point.
That's what you, that was what you touched on. And when we had the conversation on the rooftop was like the constant getting beat down that you just kind of like, you know, you could see why somebody would just be like, nah, like we done it. And y'all fucked this over consistently. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then like, then after that, after the culture has kind of been pillaged in a certain way to get to that point because of the subjugation that's occurred, then other people come in who look like us, and because the history is poorly taught, nobody understands the difference, and then excel, and maybe not excel just as well as white people, but do better, and then we get compared to them, and it's like, you don't understand, we're different. I think Maya's actually been talking, like, similar thing with you and between you and me, like, my friends, the black people I know at Amherst are mostly African and Caribbean, and so, like, we actually talked about it, and, like, we were talking, like, in a smaller group chat, and it was, like, we talked about the division that occurred between the two groups. Like, I never had the experience, but, like, my friends talked about how when they were in, like, elementary school, middle school, kids used to call them booty scratchers. And it was, like, black Americans were the hardest on Africans, like, back and forth. Like, I remember when my friend told me what, like, when I heard my friend's mom say something on the phone, and then he explained to me what it was. It was, like, kata. And I was, like, bro, like, what does that mean? He's like, oh, it's like what Africans call black Americans. And I was like, well, like, what does it mean? He's like, it means wild, it translates to wild beast. I was like, ah.
Nigga, is it?
Bro, like, and so I was like, but there's animosity between the two of us because we don't understand each other. And like, that's not, the fault of that is not on either of us. Yeah. But I think when the two groups, which really don't need to be divided in the first place, and we can better understand each other. And I think I actually was thinking about ways to do this. Like, the more we are in community, the better we all will do, especially because in present time, we face the same issues. Like, although there's definitely, like I've seen in my life, which doesn't mean anything really, but white people can distinguish as African descent, like African second generation African cultured, not black American cultured, will be looked at differently by white people than people who are black American cultured. Because there's been such a like cultural and like in terms of how history is taught and how things are taught in America, like what you see is like you hear Afrobeats, people think it's like happy. You hear black American music, it's rap and like gunning people down. Like there's a difference. And like the things that are reinforced, obviously there's also the reinforcement of like African people live in huts and like all this stuff. And like, that is a huge issue. But I think the examples of like what people see of Africans succeeding in the United States or African immigrants succeeding in the United States don't usually tend to come with the baggage of Black Americans succeeding in the US, which, and I may be wrong on that, honestly, I really don't know. But even like when you, like when I think about, like when, if I were to think about how my own bias comes into play, when I think of like an African student doing well versus a Black student doing well, or an African student doing poorly versus a Black student doing poorly, like my own bias would tell me, like informs me that like there's some cultural difference here that has an impact on that and how I would judge that person. Mm. And like part of that is me claiming not to be holier than thou in any other way, but like also part of me is like we gotta kind of, I think it's best that we come together because we in the present time and on the day-to-day we face the same issues even though our history is different and brings us to different places.
So what I'd like to ask you, right, is this whole, like this little small theory I have sometimes, right? Like, mm-hmm. You're right. Like we face like the whole, we face like the same challenges, right? Cause I told one of my professors, like, hey bro, I'm Jamaican. And this nigga says, my African American student over here. I'm like,
yeah, like, that's like yeah. Like,
but I,
it's crazy.
But like, I mean, the thing is, but my fault, but the thing is like, I'm so aware. I'm so aware. But the thing was like, the thing was that I think that I remember, like, you know, I sit here and Jack, but I'm Jamaican, right? And you know, I go back home to my, like, I moved here when I was 8.
And they home say to, you're American.
They're like, you fucking American. I'm like,
me? Me?
So who? I'm like, bro, like, even like, you know, I can't lie to myself that I am, like, as much as like Jamaican, like, culture shaped me, like, African American culture shaped me.
Definitely.
You
definitely
feel me? Like,
definitely.
Like, there's mad
things. That's the case, like, for a lot of people, bro.
Exactly. So, like, to me personally, I'm like, I really, you know, unless like an African American person would tell me otherwise, like, you know, like, we wouldn't like you to, like, you know, say it, like, you know, like, if somebody asked you if you was African American. Like, you're like, you know, claim like African, you know, some sort of like relation to, yeah, it. To me, first, yeah, I'm like, you know, like, I feel like, you know, like I've lived, like, you know, I've been influenced by a lot of, yeah, people who are African American.
Definitely,
you know,
I mean? So definitely.
I would never, ever, like, you know, like, shit on it. And you feel me? Like, I always feel like I would always stand with, like, you know, because I'm just like, at the end of the day, I see us all as just Black.
We're all Black. You know, exactly. Exactly.
But like, vision. Exactly. Cause I'm like, hey, I always tell niggas, but niggas be like, yo, but I'm Jamaican, I'm different from these niggas. Or I'm African, I'm different from these niggas. You know, I'm Nigerian, I'm different from these niggas. I'll be like,
yeah,
yeah, but you know what? When you was walking down the street, I saw a nigga. And I didn't see what you was telling me now, bro. This is what I saw. And if I saw that, and I'm Black, the white man probably sees the same thing. So you try explaining to that to him when it comes time for, like, you know,
for, not for sure.
That out. But I'm like, something I thought, right, was like, do you feel that some niggas, right, because, like, you know, for example, right, like, we, like, you know, you said, like, most of the skilled, like, immigrants, they come here, right, you know what I mean? So they used to, like, in most of the cases, right, they used to be in, like, the top of their society because they're the educated elite, right, you feel me?
Yeah.
And then they come here, right, where what determines, like, your position in society or in the hierarchy, like, the social hierarchy is not, like, your education level, but comes down to some like your skin color, right? And like, in order to like maintain that sense of like superiority that you grew up with, you have to subjugate somebody else. You
know? Yep.
Cause I heard, like, African niggas shit on Caribbean niggas too, and
you know what
I mean? And like they
should. Yeah. About,
so I'm like, I'm wondering, like, you know.
Yeah. What you mean? And I think, and the biggest thing is like, none of us benefit from it, because at the end of the day, the what we're playing into and the system that we're trying to win within is not one that was made to ever benefit any of us. So like exactly what you said, like the system that they're trying to work within is one where you're ranked almost in a way of, or like judged off the color of your skin. And like, we all Black, so none of us gonna benefit from working within that. And so I think, I mean, I've been trying to think about it a lot, and been reading and listening to a lot of like Black thought leaders from the 70s and 60s, but just like we don't need none of that. Like, abandon that system of thinking and like remember that what that does, if we try to go off that, is again further subjugate each other. Mm-hmm. And do what that racist system was designed for, to let white people do to us, to each other. Mm-hmm. And like, all it takes is for someone to get more money than the other person and then start doing it to them. You know what I mean? So like,
that's a fact.
It's like, we don't have to do that at all. We can abandon that. But it does definitely take a putting aside of pride, and a recognizing of like this person, a creation of empathy where we had not been taught to have empathy before, which is like a hard thing to do, which is why like, and like, yeah, I mean, it's no one, it's not what we're first thought, what we're first taught, it's not what we're taught to do. It's not, not going to really be anybody's first thought when first thought is survival. Let me be the best. You know what I mean? Because in this kind of capitalist system, it's definitely crabs in a barrel in a lot of situations, crabs in a barrel feeling in a lot of different places and ways. So first thought is very rarely to look out for somebody else or for to care for the community. Like, I have a friend who was like, my friend is Easy. He was 2 years older than me, played at Amherst with me. He's from Gambia. Straight from Gambia, like, didn't really go. He went to prep school for here for 4 years to get recruited for soccer. But like, he was talking about, my grandmother would never live. She said she would, the only place in the world she'd never live is America, because the America is the only place where you can, where I can die in my find out. Like, don't be in a lot of places, I guess.
Marfa, you said you cut out when you said like America is the only place you could die.
She was like, America is the only place where I could like not go outside my home for like a week, and people would never ask or know or like worry about me. Like, so I think one thing that we'd all benefit from is building that sense of community, to create opportunities for us to build empathy for each other. You know what I mean? So like even now, like Black, like African Americans and Caribbean Americans and like African immigrants, I mean, it's, even though the terms don't really mean anything, like culturally, people with different cultures live in different neighborhoods, especially in New York. Like,
that is true.
And like, that allows us to really build, like, because there's that lack of visibility and that lack of like positive collisions, we start to just view each other differently and like create the barriers for ourselves. And so I think we just benefit from communicating with each other more, kind of like the Pan-Africanism that Stokely Carmichael was talking about. Is like, we're all people who were taken from Africa and just put here. Now, depending on where you are, like the Haitian Revolution gave the land of Haiti back to the people, back to the Africans who were put there, and like that was really well done and really thoughtfully done. And Jamaica is a Black country, even though the people of Jamaica were taken from Africa, that we know as, that we see as and think of as Jamaican. But like America, he talks about America was never a Black man's country. It was never Black man's land. We were brought here, taken from Africa. And like, I definitely have to read more. I'm not going to claim to be some, sound a bit pseudo-intellectual, but like, I think we all should just realize, like, we all have to realize at some point, like, this, we, none of us have any more claim to this place than anybody else, especially people that look like us. So the best thing that we can really do is build communities within ourselves, to help each other out and build empathy for each other and learn from each other. Because the division of the communities is what government's done for a long time to Black people and really stifled the movements of the 60s and 70s for Black progress that I think we could see an interesting wave of now, especially with social media. But it's interesting. I don't think we have the thought leaders that we have, that we had back then, that we do now. I mean, I don't think we had the thought leaders now that we have. I don't think we have them that we do now that we had back then, in such a visible and vocal sense.
Like another thing, like you know, since you like you're reading up and stuff like that, which is like you know, take note, everybody. You feel me? Like educate yourself. That I was doing. It's like it's 2020, bro.
That's the thing, bro. Like we're not reading enough, man. Like because facts. Like not reading enough as in like books make you somehow smarter and all this stuff, but like in a real sense, like the knowledge that is not taught will not live and be like knowledge that's not passed on will be lost. And like there's a lot of really, really, really great things that people have done and thought of before that would apply now really well and like was lost or thrown out or gotten rid of and kept quiet for a reason. And I'm not saying all of it's true, but any knowledge and information can be helpful as long as it is thorough and well critiqued. But yeah, I don't think, and there's great stuff being written now, like New Jim Crow, Privileged Poor, was written by Amherst alum.
LACs.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and Me, and like his articles in New York and put like essays in New York Times. Really great stuff. But I think the difference between now and then is like the same people who are writing were also leading movements very visibly and like had people like large numbers of black people were avid supporters. And like I think that's what made these people so powerful and so feared at the time. And I think that's something we lack at this time.
So I'm gonna touch now a little bit, right? You feel me? And I feel like you actually have since you like, you know, you're reading up, right? You have like the ability to actually like, you know, give me some sort of answer towards this right now. And like you know, I don't know if you be on. I'm active on Twitter, so I be going through the Twitter shit. You feel me? And you see a whole lot of niggas. If you type in like a whole lot of niggas got the activist in their name. You feel me? And every nigga wants to claim that they like they the one who started a movement. They the one who this. They the one who that. Right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, I kind of feel that. Like you're right. Like I don't know. Like I don't know if we have like any real, like you know, thought leader. Like you got any real thought leaders? Because I'm like you know you got white people hopping in. I'm like and just being out here. Like this is what we should do. Like you know what I mean? Or you got just random people who I was like I didn't even know you even like talked to black. Like you might have been black, but I never seen you interact with a black person a day in my life. And now you like, you know, all of a sudden like. I'm sorry for being like all skeptical, but I'm like, niggas went from like, you know, never talking to black people, like talking bad about black people.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm X. You feel me? And I'm like,
no, but we don't have any Malcolm X's anymore. That's definitely not true. I mean, like that, but I mean that brother was different. Like, so, man, like, I mean, this would be a perfect time to have someone like him.
Yeah.
I watched this it was like an hour and a half roundtable talk that was on the news. I think it was 1969 or some year. I'll send it to you. But it was people who were thought to be like black movement leaders from all different areas. There was the head of the Black Caucus. There was Stokely Carmichael and Kwame Ture. There was Angela Davis. There was some farmers union in Mississippi, like all these different people. And one thing that was said is like, don't think of any of us as leaders, one. Like you, leadership takes many different forms and so does followership. Like anyone can contribute good ideas and as leadership in different times when certain mediums of exchange and communication are different, that leadership looks very different. Like J. Cole can be thought of as a leader and fall flat on his face because he does something really ignorant. and shows his ignorance, right? Like, no name can now be thought of as a leader, right? Things like that. Like, Sean King, even though he has some fraudulent history, can be a leader, right? But De'Ron Maxon can also be a leader. And they all do different things in different ways. Bob Marley was a leader, right? Like, and not to say that any of them were the sole contributors of their ideas that they propagated. But it's I think that's one thing that is really tough, right? Like, about this time, everything is kind of decentralized. So anybody with a Twitter account can say something, and it can blow up, or it can, like, usually just not go anywhere. And so it's interesting. I think I'm not totally sure what you're asking, but I think people just need to read and, like, understand what's been the work that's been done before us. Because I think there are a lot of people who think they're having like original thoughts. I say things and people think like even like our talk, like that was very, like that was like 80% things I'd learned and maybe 20% like the words I used and like maybe like a splash of like original thought and like just where I synthesized it. But like, that was not me being some historical policy genius. That was me just like maybe listening to a podcast. When I was in high school, I listened to 5 hours of podcasts a day, and like not like Call Her Daddy like entertainment podcast. Like, I listened to, like, as controversial as Bill Maher is, but like his guests are always amazing. Like Bill Maher's podcast, and like I'd listen not like just every week it came out. I went back to the beginning of the show and just like listen to things that people said. And, like, it was politicians, it was like activists, it was thought leaders. Like, that was like my brain food in my high school years. And I waned off that as I started playing more soccer and like was super busy in college, but I'm getting back to that now. Just like, you don't have, like, I think a lot of people are trying to nowadays, because of the incentives of social media, they incentivize you to have to kind of appear as if you're your own. They're selling you back to yourself. And if you are not original or something that people haven't seen before, you're not as marketable. And so that's also not an original thought. Like, you know what I mean? Like these are things I'm reading. Like, but like, if you can somehow be more distinct or be first, or you can convince people that you're first, or convince people that you're smarter, or cheat in some way, which is the three ways to get ahead in business.
Hey, what are the three ways? One more time from the top.
It's a quote from Margin Call. It's like it's a great movie. You'd love it as a finance guy. But you can either be first, you can be smarter, or you can cheat. that's the only way to like excel, right? Like, so I think there are a lot of people who are trying to fill one of those areas or multiple of those areas. But if you're like, I think well-intentioned people, not to say because you don't do these things, you're bad and poorly intentioned, but like the goal is to build the community, and like, it's about way more people than oneself. However, the platforms that we take part of and use to share in are mostly self-centered, or place the self as the highest priority. And so that's a tough thing to combat when, again, like the system that you're working within is not built for you to necessarily build a community that where you care, where your incentives are to care about other people. Like, if I care about likes and retweets, who cares if what I say has a negative impact on somebody else, as long as I get likes and retweets, or if I put out a song, as long as I'm getting paid for it, and that's my prerogative to get paid, then who cares who I offend? Now, the people who choose what song you can make have a lot more going on in their heads than you may think, but That's a whole nother conversation.
Bro, I mean, like, if there's one thing I have definitely, like, I just appreciate which what you said is, like, you showed a whole lot of humility. You feel me? A whole lot of humility, which I feel like nobody, everybody wanted, like, as you said, like, there's three ways to get ahead. A lot of niggas want to sound like they're the smartest nigga ever. You feel me?
Yeah. And it's like,
I appreciate you being really, like, humble towards it and just, like, you know what I mean? Making it sound like, you know, you did the legwork. That's why you were able to, like, talk at the level you were able to talk at. You feel me?
I'm still working, bro.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that for real. But we've been on this for a minute, right? So, yeah. I mean, obviously, we're going to get you back on the podcast when we get to do it live because we're going to be in the same area. Bro. You feel
me?
What you call it? But, right, I think one thing we like to do on the podcast is we like to always bring our guests back down to earth. You feel me?
Okay.
Anybody who's listening to the podcast, you know, like, you be looking at him like, God, as you said, like, he's like, I think 6 foot or something like that.
Oh, see, I saw some old pictures, some old video, some old about me. He did the dirty work.
Nah. We let you do the dirty work. You feel me?
Okay. So, okay.
Bro is, all right, you know, we're going to use his listed height as 6'2". You know,
That's Tinder.
Goes to the, you know, the second best look. I mean, arguably, if not like the first.
They're all the same.
You know
rankings
what I mean?
Don't matter, bro.
I'm a little bit, you know.
They're not all the same. In the upper echelon.
We're not Con College, you feel me? We're not Con College.
At the upper echelon, there's very little differentiation.
You feel me?
We can say that. I'll put it that way.
But, you know, you, like, you know what I mean? Like, you were recruited by, like, you know, Ivy League schools. You feel me? Like, you just made it to, like, the national championship this year. You know, you got a whole lot of things. And, like, on top of that, like, you know, you just graduated. You did STEM, which is always hard. And on top of that, you about to, like, transition and go work at, like, a bulge bracket bank. In the M&A division, you feel me? And that's really where the money is made, like, you know, the M&A division. So right now, you know, and you know, you're not a bad-looking nigga, you feel me? So, like, you know what I mean? Some would say, like, you're a good-looking guy, you feel me? So you got, like, a whole lot going for you. So, you feel me? Like, you basically coming off like fucking Black Superman. You feel me? So we gonna have, you know, we always ask our guests to tell us if a time, you know, where they fucked up. You feel me? Like, they fucked up.
Oh, God.
Fumbled the bag, and you know what I mean?
Oh, God.
Because everybody can relate to me fucking up, and you know what I mean? That really, I think our whole goal here is to, like, make sure, like, niggas can see and is believing. You feel me? So nobody, not everybody believes they can be Superman, but you know what I mean? If we find out, like, you just human too. You feel me? It always, it does wonders for, like, you know,
yeah,
somebody else who could be watching this thinking, like, you know, I could achieve all this too.
Definitely.
If I know this thing was a, you know, he fucked up just like I did.
Definitely. Failure. I'm really bad at failure stories just because I'm humble already. And so I always think of myself as, like, failing. Not always, but, like, I'm the type of person where I'll share an idea and I'll be like, but I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, like,
I do that consistently. My girl hates that. Failure story.
Or just a funny story. You know what I mean?
I'll give you an unfortunate story. So, like, freshman year, like, so this is soccer related, but pans out in different ways. It was actually pretty good. Freshman year coming into Amherst, like I told you, like, my soccer journey was super humbling. Started off really bad, and I knew I wasn't very good, but I knew I was, like, crazy athletic, like, super fast. Like, I was the fast guy on the field. I had, like, a 40-inch vert, but, like, I wasn't that technically gifted. And I thought, because I'd be going to Amherst and it's D3, I'll be, like, I'm gonna get off on you guys. So, first, this might be a little longer story, but first,
go ahead, bro. Take this home.
So I get to campus preparing for the fitness test, and like, I don't know. I had this thing where like my chest would hurt sometimes when I'm doing like aerobic fitness, mm-hmm. and so like I went to the trainer and I was like, yo, like I have chest pains, and like. She's like, they don't play no jokes when you're at that level. So like, I got immediately like, I wasn't like they took my clearance to play, and I had to go like get an EKG, get like an echocardiogram, and like took me out for a while. This is multiple failures, and so I missed like the fitness test like the first week of practice, and so I see like. All of these, like, I'm watching practice instead of playing, and like, I'm watching, I'm like, oh, these heads are nice, but these heads are nice, like, yeah. D1 transfers, like, stupid, like, all Americans, D1 transfers, guys who played pro in like second division Spain, like, that type of nice, And so I got to get back to playing, not playing very much at all. Scored a couple goals, nothing crazy. And like BS games. Cause like, so I just used that and I came back sophomore year. Like I came back with a vengeance, bro. Like I was working out all the time. That off season, I would work out, do our regular workouts and off season. I mean, regular workouts, and like I'd work out every night with my best friend on the lacrosse team. We'd go to the gym for an hour until we got kicked out. And eventually stopped kicking us out because he just knew we were just there grinding. Came back sophomore year, started, played crazy well. And like starting over guys who were seniors. And like guys who were like, one guy was like my big brother. And I was like, I'm just shit. Like started talking like, I was like, I mean, I never talked to girls in high school. Freshman year, I started like trying that.
Wait, you never talked to girls in high school?
Not really, bro.
Like, I can't believe that, bro. I've seen this nigga in action, bro.
Bro,
this nigga is capping, bro. This nigga is capping, bro.
Bro, you saw me 3 years later.
Bro, in high nigga, school, was, nigga, nah, bro. I feel like you could kind of tell a nigga when a nigga is new to like the whole game.
Bro, new after a couple of years is not new.
You move like a vet.
I didn't say I was like not charming. I just didn't know how to talk. So like started that freshman year, sophomore year, I had the confidence from like starting as a sophomore and like going crazy, like doing super well, being like a go-to player, and like confidence was crazy. And that translated to that too. Then sophomore season was good. Went to Sweet 16. It was okay. Okay year. Came back, was working at Under Armour over the summer, had so much fun there, and then was really getting ready to like have a standout junior year to shoot for all conference, hopefully like maybe all American, see what I could do that way. And then first day of preseason, we had like fitness testing and then chilled. Our fitness testing in the morning, then we played in the afternoon. Then we played after that fitness testing. And then we had a season, then we had a scrimmage, preseason scrimmage in the afternoon. Preseason scrimmage, pull my hamstring. Mm. Never had any injury like that before. And I was like talking to my trainer, I was like, okay, like gonna be a couple weeks, then I'm back. She's like, yeah. Like she said, gonna be a couple weeks, just rest, go through rehab, proper everything, then get back. We thought it was because of dehydration at the time. That's why I pulled it. Get back into playing. Missed a game, but we won. It was all good. Played the next game. We actually ended up losing. It was terrible. And then I was playing a couple games, fine. And then came back, practice, pulled it again. Came back and I pulled my other one, and it was probably worse than the first pull. Came back, rehab, play a couple of games. And it was like, and not playing was messing with my head like crazy. Because I'd come off like crazy sophomore year. I'm older, supposed to be doing better. And like the team is good. And like, if I was like, in my head, I'm just like, if I could get back to playing, like, we'd be great. And like, because we weren't having like a stellar season like we usually do. It's good by most ends, but not ours. And so my head was all over the place. And it was the biggest way it translated was like, I was like, could not talk to girls at all. It was hilarious. I'm a straight guy, so I talk to girls. So that was two pulls. Came back, played a game, scored, whatever, injured again. Pulled hamstring. Came back, played for a while, pulled hamstring. So I pulled it either 4 or 5 times that season. Might have only played 5 games total. Mm-hmm. Scored 2 goals. But, like, my head was all over the place. So I was, like, the expectation of what I had versus what I was getting and for something that seemed to be totally out of my control, it felt like I felt the least like myself and what I planned to be like myself. But after a while, like, I was just like, you know, like, life is going to hit you with things and things are not always going to be the way you plan for them to be. And sometimes you just got to realize what the new norm is and change your expectations. And so it was really tough, but I really like kind of came into a role of like, all right, like I can still be a leader on this team. I can still really have an impact on this team. And so I just became like, I don't want to diminish the role of a coach, but like I was like a kind of a player coach kind of thing. Whereas like, I'm the loudest one in practice. If I'm not dressed for practice, and I'm like telling the other forwards like who are kind of because we kind of built the system around guys playing like the way I played in a way, just really like slashing strikers and wingers, and so like really overcoach like trying to do overcoaching or just being over like being a coming to be a find a new role, right? Like everyone's a role player in a lot of ways. Find my new role, and so fell flat on my face in that way. Came, started doing that. And then senior year, just wasn't the same. I had barely played a full season. And I was working so much at City, could barely play soccer. And I came back senior, I was like, nah, I'm not even feeling it that much. Like, I wasn't even sure if I was going to play, honestly, just from, like, being on the team. But I just wasn't in it, man. Like, my head wasn't in it. And then I was like, you know what? Like, I can, in a different way, I can change my role. And so I focused on being – I mean, I played a good amount. Like, I started games. I played a lot. Played just about every game. But, like, changed in my head, like, what I was going to focus on and being the best at. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to set an example in as many ways as I can. Be the most coachable. Be the most disciplined on and off the field. Be a leader and, like, be there for the young guys. Because one thing in college sports is, like, you got kids, like I was 21 at the time, but you got kids coming in at 17, 18 if you don't know shit. It's like be a. And so that was, but I mean, I never was at that level that I was 2 years ago in terms of playing ever again. Like I literally forgot like how to play in my position, how to play soccer in a lot of ways. But the biggest thing I took from that was like, if you're in a difficult position, there are always going to be, there's room for every type of person who works hard. Something that can bring value to your group or your team or your office or your company, or whatever that is. And so I realized if I work hard at playing, I'm not going to get that much. If I work hard at being the best player, based on the time I have and where I'm at now, I'm not going to be able to get that much out of it in the time that I want to be able to be good at things. But I can work on these other things and help other people in these ways and really contribute. And so that was a long way version of long way of saying that, I guess. Right, but yeah.
Hey, bro. I appreciate the story, bro. I'm sure everybody going to appreciate hearing that. You feel me? Because It's one thing that I feel like if any nigga grew up playing sports, bro, and like for whatever reason you stop playing for like a little bit, like yo, I don't even like watching soccer no more.
I don't watch soccer, bro. Like after I finished that senior season, I was just like, all right, bet, time to never touch a soccer ball again. Like, bro, like my favorite thing to do is still play pickup basketball.
Right.
I just started doing basketball workouts after I finished that season. Yeah, I literally just started doing basketball workouts. I'm so serious. Like the balls in my room are basketballs.
Bro. I'm sorry, yo.
KDs. My cleats are somewhere. I use my cleats for the beep test. I run beep tests occasionally. But like,
nigga, this shit. Like the whole sports Jeez, thing is a
Curry's
terrible thing, bro.
Like, I was fucking sportsman. It's unfair. Like, and the thing is, like, I have friends who play pro, and like, guys who are older than me who play pro, and like, they go through trials and tribulations over their careers, but their careers are 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, you can have if I got injured my sophomore year and I'm playing year round, I can still have a good next year if I'm playing year round, I'm playing pro. Mm-hmm. Or like, I can have a good maybe year after my senior year if I was at a 5-year career, because I can recover from that. But like, if you only got 4 seasons and you also got life to deal with, like 4 years is not enough, which is also why like the high D1s have such different lives, because it's really like they're not thinking about it that way. Like, it's just different. It's different, man. College sports ain't fair, bro.
College sports, bro, it's like one of the most cut, it has to be like one of the most cut sports, like cutthroat things I ever like participated in, bro. Like, that shit really fucks you. Like, I don't know if like, niggas really talk about it, but like, college sports really fucks you up mentally, bro. Mentally. Like, I used to love watching. What you mean?
Like, I definitely came out of my program at least, like, understanding competition. Like, our coach, our team now was nasty. Like, our team this year was like technically one of the best teams I've ever played for. But like, before, like, the history of Amherst soccer is like really a lot of like New England style kickball, ugly goals, corner kick goals, set pieces. Like, when I came in, it was like my freshman, we probably scored 80% of our goals off set pieces.
Right.
And we go into games like, I guess it's part of our scouts. Like, when we played Bowdoin, like, my freshman year, our coach gave us a scout. And he was like, these are the past 10 games against Bowdoin, 12 games against Bowdoin. 11 or 10 out of 12 have been decided by a set piece. And, like, 8 of them or 9 of them have been, like, one-goal games. So, this game will be – and he was right, bro. Like, most of my games against Bowdoin have been won and lost on set pieces. And one goal game unless we smack them. So, like,
yeah.
So, it's that's what our soccer was. So, it's way more, and that's way more about like chance favoring aggression. So, it's way more like, will you put your body on the line to put the ball in the back of the net instead of like, all right, guys, tactics and like all this stuff. And so, like, our practices were a lot of like getting guys to be competitive.
Yeah.
Cause like, you can only teach so much technical ability in a season. So, it's like, you need to make sure you're being competitive, like, know your scout and like that. But it wasn't all this like, tiki taka, like, move the ball, like, all. It was like, bro, like, if you want to win this game, this is what we gotta do.
Yeah.
And you also gotta be mentally tough. So like, so much of practice is like mental toughness, which like I enjoyed and definitely translated to other places, like other parts of my life. Mm. But like, it's crazy, man. It's crazy.
What it takes away as it, like, what it takes away from you as a person, it adds a lot of value to you. Now, you know what I mean? I feel like since we're going like a finance and shit, like, a lot of niggas play sports and finance because, yeah, like, you need that kind of level of grit to be like going through all of,
yeah,
I do. You feel me? When like, yeah,
definitely,
call you a pussy, definitely, bitch, and you can't do that. Like, just fucking hit back at Excel.
Definitely. Like, it takes like a certain amount of like willingness to take orders and execute, yeah, them. without question and in a timely manner, as if your career is on the line, which is sports.
Word.
Which is sports when you can get cut.
Word. Nah, yo. Yeah. I would always recommend everybody to play sports, bro. Sports teaches you so much.
Definitely.
You fuck up in the sport, you like, all right, you cool. You could survive, learn the lesson. You fuck up in real life, all right, bro. Like,
that's your ass.
That nigga.
Yeah, bro. I definitely came out of playing soccer at Amherst. It's like, I'm glad I went through that program in particular.
Yeah.
And the things I learned from my coach and the guys I was around and the culture that was built over time. Yeah. But now I just hate losing. Like, I can't stand losing. And everything, like, I have to win everything, which is like different, not always great. Like, we have this thing we say, like, winners win small set of games. And it's like, say we play like a 5v5 type of thing. If you lose the, like, if you don't win the 5v5, you're coming off the field yelling at each other, like, why the fuck didn't you do this? Like, what the fuck? And that's like the environment I've been in. Like, and it's made us all better. And it was never done in a way where it's like guys take things personally. And it's also funny, like a funny thing, like, we get chewed out all the time. Like, and it's not a problem. It's like, you're an adult. You can get chewed out. It's okay. Just don't do it again. But it's like, if to us, it was like, you can tell how much guys care when they react that way. And it was like, that was one thing that we always put first, is like, caring comes first. Like, you can tell when you care or don't care about something. And like that. And that's a really easy thing that you can be honest with yourself about. And like, it was 100% all the time, man. Like, everything, competed everything on some Bill Belichick shit, bro. Competed everything. Not Bill Belichick, the guy at the Seahawks or Seattle.
Pete Carroll.
I think that's what he said. Computed everything. Like, that's how we were. It was just like, and not like, like, they're guys who like are competitive. It's funny. I mean, college soccer's funny, man. College sports are funny. Just like how much people care about stuff.
But hey, bro. We gonna go ahead. This is probably like one of my. I don't want to say that. I'm just like it. Because we had some great guests. But you definitely, you up. Nah, you up there. You up there. You as enjoyable as any other guests. You feel me? I appreciate you taking the time out to come 3 hours late. To this. Yes, this nigga came 3 hours late. But it was definitely worth the wait. So, you know, if you want to drop your, you know, where they can follow you at.
Oh, bro, I actually got rid of my Instagram.
Hey, did you delete the app, or like you deactivated your account?
Yeah, only temporarily though.
Got you.
Just because it's like, bro, like, if social media is me trying to check in on my friends and what their lives are like, that's not what it is right now. And like, if I'm going to get news, I'm going to read a book. I'm going to read a local newspaper, the New York Times. I'm not trying to go to Sally Mae's page and see 5 ways not to be racist. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what I'm here for.
You're right. You bring up a good point. Nah, you definitely. But anyways, you know, he gonna be back on the podcast, you know.
For sure.
When things hopefully when we get back to some semblance of normalcy, you know, because we're gonna be in the same spot. I share this off air. But anyway, you know, I hope everybody have a great weekend or great day, depending whenever you listen to this shit. And you know, I know it's long, but if you made it through, you got like, you know, bro dropped a lot of gems, bro dropped a lot of like just like not a lot of knowledge. So it's definitely worth it. So, you know, tune in whenever the fuck I drop another episode. So catch y'all.
Salute, bro.